Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Red Men TV. What's happening? How you doing? How you feeling? Obviously we're in the middle of an international break at the moment. We're just under a week removed from the transfer window closing. And something that's sort of been burning my head out over the last, well, I don't know, a few weeks certainly as we came towards the close of the transfer window, and it was this notion of whether or not Liverpool, having only brought Ibrahima Konate and have improved their squad in general, and I'll be honest, this is sort of born of this contention that I've had in my head anyway, and whether this was true or not, I didn't know. What I felt was that Liverpool were effectively adding players to the side that won the title. And whether that makes sense or not, and whether Liverpool have added to, have Liverpool improved from the team that lifted the league? Because I felt that last season was such a mad anomaly that it was very hard to really judge where Liverpool were at. Now, finishing third without a senior centre half at the club for half a season gives you a pretty good indication that the side's pretty good. But yeah, I want to try to sort of address a few general thoughts, feelings and concerns around how good Liverpool's squad is or isn't. And obviously some people might choose to tie that into the ownership or the transfer committee structure, whether that's Michael Edwards or Jurgen Klopp, etc. But yeah, I thought the most intelligent way for me to do this was to use a spreadsheet, because intelligent people use spreadsheets. Chris uses them all the time. He loves them, loves a spreadsheet, this page. Now, I've not got any macros working on this, but what I've done, for the sake of complete clarity here, I have compared Liverpool's squad from the start of the 18-19 season to the start of this season. So, to just set the scene of where that is, Liverpool have just lost in Kiev the Champions League final to Real Madrid in heartbreaking circumstances. Liverpool went into the market, we'll talk about that and who that was within a second, and they started this campaign having basically been a top four side and just had a first run at the Champions League and got all the way to the final. What we now know is that the 18-19 season led to Liverpool, began almost like the modern Liverpool side that we've got right now, and the real success started to tick in from then. So in 18-19, Liverpool got 97 points in the Premier League and won the Champions League. And then the following season went on to win the Premier League with 99 points, winning it in the quickest time ever, and coming down with, I think that's the, is that the second highest points tally of all time? Whatever. Anyway, there you go. So what I want to do is to see kind of where Liverpool are at. So when Liverpool became the all-conquering force that became the champions of everything, the best team in the world, what kind of position were they in going into that season? Because I think we look back on it a little bit sometimes with rose-tinted glasses to some extent, or maybe we don't. Maybe some people look back on it and think that maybe that squad wasn't as good or whatever. But we know what that squad did, and I thought it was important to look at the construction of that and stand it next to now. For purposes that I will sort of get to in the while we're having a discussion or whatever. If you want to dive in on any of this, by the way, you can use the comments section alongside if you're watching this live. I'll try to be as illustrative as possible because I do have a spreadsheet and it doesn't really translate very well when you can't speak to audio form. But there's a couple of things here. So let's get it up and I'll show you what I've done. So what I've done is I've stacked the two squads side by side, and some of this isn't going to put out, the notes and the game debate loss will come to later on in the show. But for purposes I've got here, the squad that Liverpool started 18-19 with on the left, and the squad that they're starting this season, 21-22, with just next to it. The players highlighted in yellow are where we've changed a member of the squad, and players highlighted in green are new signings to the squad for that season. And the only other note is italics with a little star next to them, like Cuevan Kelleher, Nat Phillips, Nathaniel Klein, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Rhian Brewster, all indicates that they basically played either zero games for Liverpool that season or as close to as almost makes no odds. And what I did was I took the full squad lists from those campaigns and sort of stacked them side by side. So the first takeaway that you can get there is that volume-wise, Liverpool have actually this more or less the same number of bodies available now in the squad as they had back in 2018-19. Just to give you some headline facts then from that, away from the spreadsheet, the average age of our squad in 2018-19 was 25.4 years. It is in this season 26.4, so it's aged a year, which I think is quite interesting given this general consensus, of course. We can come back to me now, sorry. The general consensus, of course, that the squad's now massively, massively aged. Obviously, some players have aged, but in certain areas, the squad has gotten younger as well, which is how you end up with that sort of average age thing. Just for some headline facts again, we went into the 18-19 season with four brand new signings, whereas we know just one new signing for this season. I've actually included Phillips and Kelleher, even though although they were both Liverpool players at the time, I kind of went back to include them. Kelleher was more around the squad at that point as like as the youth goalkeeper on the fringes. Nat Phillips was not involved at all. He was very much an under-23 player. And the same sort of goes for Rhian Brewster as well, albeit he had injury problems, which limited his play as well. And one more interesting note is Joe Gomez, which I'd forgotten about, went into this season as a right back. Now, he played centre half, and he played a lot of centre half in 18-19, but he actually was used almost entirely as a right back in the 17-18 season, which I think is a really fascinating one. It's mad how quickly that comes around. But 28 of his 30 games in the 17-18 season came at right back. He only played centre half once prior to this season beginning, so I think that's quite a cool, interesting thing as well. The ones that I think are really the most sort of illustrative of things in here is, as I mentioned there, is let's say Nathaniel Phillips didn't get used at all. Klein made just five appearances in the season leading into that, so 17-18, just five appearances, and he only made in the season that's about to start, 18-19, just 183 minutes due to the back injury, and then he was moved to Bournemouth on loan in the January, so that's an interesting one. And Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, we all know this, of course, but he actually made 46 appearances for Liverpool prior to his cruciate injury that he suffered in the Roma game in the Champions League. He then went on to miss all of 18-19. He had a grand total of 19 minutes game time in the 18-19 season, which again is quite an interesting point. So again, as much as Oxlade-Chamberlain is there, he's obviously he missed that entire season because of the cruciate injury that he suffered. And again, mentioned similar with the Brewster stuff as well. So what I sort of want to break this down to is this column we've got here, which is the gains, the debatables and the losses. So again, this is all relatively speaking subjective, and feel free to agree or disagree with me on any of this stuff, but I'm just going to present it as I sort of see it. I think there's what we're going to break down as obvious gains. There are arguable gains, there are clear losses, and then there's arguable either way. So I'll go through the obvious gains in the squad. First and foremost, Alisson. So Alisson Becker was 25 when we brought him in. He'd just done his first full season for Liverpool, for Roma, sorry. Prior to that, he'd been understudy to Szczesny, so he had one full senior season. He'd been the cup goalkeeper prior to that, and actually he was mainly the Europa League goalkeeper for Roma prior to his season, where we end up meeting him on the road to Kiev. So I would argue, I think that's an inarguable gain. Let's just go player for player. Alisson in 18-19 to Alisson now, having done all the things he's done, he's a goalkeeper. Goalkeepers only really start to hit the peak around the age that Alisson's getting to now. So I think although in terms Mignolet was the backup goalkeeper going into that season, now we've got Adrian technically filling that slot because, as mentioned, we're sort of Kelleher was around, so we'll keep Kelleher stacked up alongside Kelleher. And I think in that regard, you've got what were classed as an obvious loss. So as much as Mignolet wasn't a great goalkeeper for Liverpool, is he a better goalkeeper than Adrian? Yeah, he is. And I'm not going to sit here and get into like any sort of slaughtering of Adrian by any stretch of the imagination. But Mignolet, Liverpool had a really, really, really good professional senior age backup goalie there. And we talk about this a lot, and I've done a lot of videos on this about how you improve your squad by improving your first team, and then your previous first team players become your backup players. Now, we couldn't keep Mignolet around for long, and they made a decision. They farmed Karius out on loan for that season after Kiev and kept Mignolet. So Mignolet goes all the way as the understudy to Alisson, all the way to the Champions League final that season. So I think that's a loss. I think in terms of the squad quality, the goalkeeper depth from 18-19, I think that's a loss. I think Kelleher to Kelleher is an obvious gain because he's gone from being a youth player to, I think, most of us now. If you said Alisson was out, most of us, I mean, no one would be like, yes, we've got Cueva and Kelleher in goal. But I think from the performances we saw last season, I think we've got a very capable understudy there. Is he as good as Mignolet? Probably not. But in terms of, again, Kelleher to Kelleher and his role in the squad, he has improved. So I think that's an obvious game. Moving on to the defenders, and we get to our first sort of debatable one. Virgil van Dijk. So Virgil going into 18-19 was 27 years old. Going into this season, he's 30, and he's come off the back of a very serious cruciate knee injury, which we know kept him out for what? Three quarters of the season last year. Now, so far, so good. It does look like he's back up and running. He looks amazing. All of a sudden, the Chelsea game is a big test for him, and we're feeling loads more confident. But, and I've put it debatable, because I think you could maybe argue that's a straight loss, because he's a bit older, and he's just had a major knee injury. So, yeah, that stands right. That stands to reason. But he is experienced, he's won loads more things, he's added silverware, so in a general sense he's improved. I think we could probably all say that, you know, the mentality, the character, his stature within the game, but I still think it falls in with the debatable thing. And the same goes for Joel Matip as well, because again, Matip, another one, 27 at the start of the 18-19 season, 30 going into this campaign, which is mad because I think everyone thinks of him as being about 34. He made 35 appearances going into the 18-19 season. That's the Kiev season. He missed the last 11 games of that season from the Champions League quarterfinals onwards with a hamstring injury, and then was missing for the start of the 18-19 season. Again, Matip has started like an absolute house on fire. It looks brilliant, but we all know he is what he is. And I'm sort of debatable because, yes, he's older, but he doesn't seem to be any more or less injury-prone. I just think there was probably a little bit over Matip at that time where, and Lovren was ahead of him in the pecking order, basically because, you know, we finished the season with Lovren partnering Van Dijk because Matip's out, Lovren's brilliant in the Champions League final. So I will put that down as debatable because it stands to reason that there's a law of diminishing returns with injury on Matip, but that's that. In terms of our next backup centre-half, effectively what we've done in the squad is swap Dejan Lovren for Ibrahima Konate, which would have been a bit more obvious if they'd just done it last summer. But obviously we've waited a full year for that to happen. Now I have that down as an obvious loss, and not because I don't think Konate is really, really good, but, you know, he's a 22-year-old centre half. Dejan Lovren was 29, right at the peak of his powers at that point. And yes, you know, we knew Lovren inside and out, so we knew he had a mistake in him, but Konate, for me anyway, right now is unproven. So you've got a senior centre half, full international class, by the way, in terms of Lovren. I think that's an unarguable or a clear loss, but that's up for debate. If you disagree with that, please feel free. Lovren made 43 appearances this previous season. Konate made just 21 for Leipzig last year going into this one, so that's a point. Further down, we've got another obvious game. Phillips gone from being a European player, from being an under-23 player, not quite the opposite, in fact, to being a nailed-on first team member. In fact, it's funny, when I was doing this list, I forgot about Phillips because I thought he was going to move on, so I added him in when we signed him down to a new contract, and stayed. He, for me, is a massive gain on the squad because effectively he's a free hit. He's an extra defender that we've added into the mix this season. So we went into 18-19. Again, a 97-point Champions League winning season with Van Dijk, Matip, Lovren and Gomez. Gomez, actually, which we will come to next, was completely unproven at centre-half at that point. And Phillips was basically in amongst the kids. So the Phillips is a massive gain, I think, in terms of defence. But, you know, I haven't got a massive gain section, so I'm just going to give him a green. And Gomez, as mentioned there, I think that's another gain. Having basically been a right-back, he was... as much as we know he's gone on to be a good centre-half, he was a right-back going into that campaign. So from now to then, we don't know about his fitness and what kind of Gomez we're going to get back, but also we're in a situation where we know he's a top-quality centre-half. It's now proven. Now, he'd obviously had his own injury problems as well prior to that, so I think that kind of cancels that out. But yeah, I see Gomez as being in a much stronger and better position now than he was going into that season. Let's move into the fullbacks then. Trent then to Trent now, gain. I think that's clear. You know, Trent Alexander-Arnold in 17-18 made 33 appearances at right back with 3 goals and 3 assists. That was the season leading into the Champions League season, whereas you look at him now, okay, not his best in terms of output last year, but now he's the best right-back in world football and he's still only 22 years old. So yeah, Trent is better now than he was at the start of that season. I think that's a clear gain. In terms of the backup right-back, now this is where it gets a little bit tricky because on paper, Nathaniel Klein versus Nico Williams, I think even I would say I would rather have Klein as a backup to Nico, and that's not because I'm not looking to disrespect Nico in any way, shape or form, but for me, Klein will always be that brilliant, ultra-dependable right-back that we had who never got injured. He was just a class act. We brought him in and he was solid. He was the heir apparent to the Steve Finnan throne of being 7 out of 10 every week. And sometimes just having fullbacks who are 7 out of 10 is great. And Nico Williams is in the level of his career where he needs to aspire to actually start being able to do that for Liverpool. I have put it as a gain, though, in terms of Williams, and I'm sure people will disagree, but allow me to just walk through my rationale on that. I've sort of hinted at it before. The season going into that, Klein had made just 5 appearances and then he would go on to make just 183 minutes. He started against Man United, he then had a couple of isolated minutes, and then I think it was Jamie Redknapp called it a disgrace when we sent him out on loan and no one's thought about him since. Nico, on the other hand, last season made 11 appearances for him. He made 11 appearances for Liverpool, 679 minutes. So I know he didn't set the world alight, but he's much more available and he's got a higher ceiling. And I do think, and this is where it comes into personal opinion, he suits Liverpool's style of play a bit better. He's just a bit better. He's better on the ball. We used to make a joke about Klein about how he'd get a nosebleed crossing halfway line and he couldn't cross to save his life. Nico Williams' crossing's really good. I think he's a better footballer, but the Klein, it's hard to detach the best Klein, the one that we had who wasn't injured. And you know, I mean, look at him. I mean, look at it now. He's 27 there. He's only 30 now. It's mad. It's mad how his career just absolutely plunged after that serious back injury that he had. Right, we'll move on then. Robertson. Again, I think that's a clear gain. Same person, improved, better at football. Robertson went into the season. In fact, it's really interesting because in 17-18, going into the 18-19 season again, Robertson had only been selected. In the first half of the season, he was only selected for 4 of the first Premier League match day squads. So he wasn't even on the bench. He was only on the bench. He wasn't even used for 10 of the first 14 Premier League games. Now, he went on to get 30 appearances. And last season, he gets 50 because he's an absolute machine. But he's the best left-back in the world now, or arguably so. Back then, he was coming into it having won his place after Moreno got injured. In fact, Moreno even played a bit of the back end of the season when Robertson had a couple of issues, and we were trying to keep him fresh as well for Champions League stuff. So it wasn't 100% set in stone that Robertson was of the supreme quality. He just won that personal battle. This was the season, 18-19, where he really started to kick on. Now we're seeing him years down the line where he's completely established. So I think that's an unarguable clear gain. In terms of the backup left back option then, Moreno to Tsimikas. Now, I've got this down as debatable, and some people might be snorting into their coffee hearing me say that, and some people might think that's absolutely fair. Now, Moreno, again, conversely to what I just said about Robertson, he went from being, he had a stellar start to the 17-18 season for Liverpool, which is not relevant to this, I'm just for context and where he came about. He did lose his place to Robertson, and we all know Moreno, we all know the baggage that he carries, but he was an established left-back for Liverpool at that point. Tsimikas, I think it's debatable borderline gain. I don't think he's far off being a clear and obvious game because, yeah, look, he looks really good. He looks like a perfect fit for Liverpool too. But we've not seen enough of him just yet. Early doors for that. But I think that could quite easily turn from a debatable to a gain. Midfield, Henderson versus Henderson. Debatable. Yeah. For similar reasons that we've discussed, a 28-year-old Henderson going into 18-19 and a 31-year-old coming into this season. That's another couple of seasons of another couple of injury problems and what have you. I think that's the only thing really that stands between. And I, again, on personal opinion, I think it's a gain because I think Jordan Henderson, having won the silverware that he's won, that was the final thing that set him free. He now walks onto the pitch for Liverpool. And England, 10 feet tall. He doesn't carry the weight of the world. He's become a better man. Everything about Jordan, I think, has improved. But he's 3 years older. And that is something that sort of takes a toll. So maybe I'm being a little harsh doing that as debatable. But I want to try and be as objective on this as possible. I think that's debatable, leaning towards gain. But just so you know, my thinking on that. I've covered that up. 41 appearances for Liverpool in 17-18, whereas he only made 28 last season. So there's a really base argument. He was probably he was fitter and more available, technically, going into the 18-19 season. He played much more games for us. He's coming into this season after another injury hit one, which could be seen as a bit of a detriment. Midfield, so Fabinho, who was the new signing, at 24 years old to now Fabinho, 27, he might even be just about 28 now as well, actually. I might be slightly wrong. But yes, I think that's a gain because, yeah, he's now an established DM. I mean, you think about him again in that season. In fact, in the season leading into that, he makes 46 appearances for Monaco, finished second in Ligue 1. Then he joins Liverpool straight after we lost in Kiev, of course. But now I think he's established himself as Liverpool. He wasn't even Liverpool's best DM. It took him half a season to establish himself. So now we're talking about a guy who one of the first names on the team sheet. So I think that's a clear game for Fabinho, better now than he was then. Now in midfield is another debatable one, Wijnaldum versus Thiago. So all we all know, Gini Wijnaldum, what you got in him was you got versatility. You got 50 games a season, pretty much. And as we saw there, in the season leading into 18-19, Gini played 50 times in the 17-18 campaign. Last season, Thiago made a total of 30 appearances for Liverpool. We know he had the knee injury suffered at Everton. He had also had to get over COVID as well. And he's had a couple of little struggles already this season. So I don't think anyone looks at Thiago and says he's going to play 50 games a season for Liverpool. He's the same age now as Wijnaldum is now, so you had a younger Wijnaldum at that point as well. But in terms of all-round quality of footballer, I think Thiago is a better footballer than Wijnaldum. You know, okay, different footballers, but I think he is. I think you're talking about one of the best players, one of the best, unarguably one of the best centre mids in world footy. But I've put it as debatable for those factors. Thiago hasn't got the same sort of resilience that Gini has, and of course Gini was well established in that side, so I think Thiago still needs to prove himself that he shouldn't need to because he's so good, but he hasn't quite established himself as a go-to. He's not proven himself a total match winner for Liverpool, although the signs bode very well. So I've got that as debatable. Milner versus Milner, I think that's a loss just because he was 32 and now he's 35. He went into the 18-19 season having broken the assist record for a single season in the Champions League. I don't think any one of us expects Milner to be doing that again this year. He very much went from 18-19 being an integral part of the midfield, and now he's the fringe. He's the backup for a number of positions there, so that's a loss. Keita versus Keita. Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen? I've got it as debatable. He was a new signing, came with all kinds of promise. We'd all been watching him for Leipzig for a year while he stayed there after we had agreed the deal for him. He made 39 appearances for Leipzig in 17-18 as they finished sixth in the Bundesliga. And why is it arguable? Because he's more integrated now. But we also know that he gets injured all the time. You could argue, is it debatable borderline on loss? Maybe. Guys, let us know your thoughts on that one if you would be so kind. I just want to say thank you for Key to Start, who says loving this nice analysis. I'm trying my best. Yeah, that's a tricky one. Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think, is a clear and obvious gain simply because I think if you're comparing 17-18 Ox to now Ox, that's a clear loss, but we're not. We're comparing the season that started, the squad that started the 18-19 season, and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has two working knees. So that puts it as a clear gain in terms of squad because Liverpool have been able to use him already this season. He's already played more football. Is that right? Did he play Norwich? Sorry? He played Norwich, so there you go. He's already played more football this season than he played in the entire of the 18-19 season, so that's a clear game for me. Right, here's where we get into another interesting one. Lallana to Curtis Jones. So a 30-year-old Adam Lallana to a 20-year-old Curtis Jones. I've got this as debatable, and I think that's because Curtis still a young player, still finding his way, and Lallana was an established player. He was a big voice and a big leader in and around the pitch. Again, senior England international vote. He'd been voted the season before, or maybe the season before that, as England's best player in one particular season. But what I thought was quite interesting, because you're getting towards the tail end of Lallana, 17-18 Lallana made just 16 appearances. So going into the 18-19 campaign off the back of a season when he made just 16 appearances and got just 519 minutes and one assist. Last season, Curtis Jones made 34 appearances for Liverpool. 1,920 minutes of appearances, got 4 goals and 5 assists at 19 years old. So really, on pure paper, in terms of their output, it's actually a gain. I think it's a gain. I think Jones is a healthier addition and maybe a more beneficial addition potentially to Liverpool's squad. But I've gone debatable because, again, Adam Lallana was a proven known entity. But yeah, I do think that's borderline. But yeah, thoughts in the comments on that one. And then Shaqiri to Elliott rounds out the midfield. So Shaqiri was a new signing going into 18-19, came with a reputation. He had played for relegated Stoke, making 38 appearances, 8 goals and 7 assists in the 17-18 season, whereas Elliott spent last year out on loan at Championship Blackburn, 43 appearances, 7 goals and 12 assists. Now, you could argue that, you know, Stoke end up at sort of Championship level, but he was playing at Premier League level. So I think that's, I'm going with debatable because I think we've already seen that Elliot being chosen for two big games in the Premier League shows that I think Klopp thinks he fits into the side. Shaqiri had never been more than a fringe player at Liverpool. We had to change the formation or change the style, and we were unwilling to do that for Shaqiri. He proved to be a great break glass option, but I'm trying not to pick too much of what I know about Shaqiri's career after the fact, because I'm judging on what he was to Liverpool at the start of the 18-19 season. So you could argue it's a loss because Shaqiri was proven quality, senior age player, 26 years old, played at World Cups and Euros and led his country and played for Bayern Munich and obviously played for Inter Milan and played for Stoke in the Premier League. And Elliot doesn't have that kind of experience, so that's why I've gone debatable. But it's an interesting one, and maybe a year from now it'll be seen as a clear gain. And I have a sneaky feeling it's a clear gain because, again, Elliot is a viable option for Liverpool's midfield, and I think Shaqiri was used there periodically just to get him on the pitch, not because we really felt that he was a key player. And if we'd had more midfield options last season, I don't think we'd have seen him there at all. Right, let's move into the forwards then. Firmino to Firmino, clear loss. Because this is not a dig on Bobby Firmino at all, and I know some people are happy to highlight his lack of goal return at the moment, but he came into the 18-19 season off the back of his best ever goal return. 27 goals in 17-18 for Bobby Firmino. However, he's coming into this season off the back of the 2021 season with his worst ever goal return, 9. So I think just based on that simply alone, I think that's a clear loss. It just is on that alone, Bobby Firmino. And look, we could do that for Salah and Mane, but we'll come into them in a second. I think there's other factors that make it more debatable. I don't think you could argue that Firmino does more of the other bits. I think he does the same. He's still brilliant at linking everything. He just did all that, but in 17-18, he scored loads of goals. So I think if you stack him, the end of 17-18, like going into the 18-19 season for Firmino versus this one, that's a loss. That makes sense, right? Cool. Salah versus Salah. 26-year-old Salah versus 29-year-old Salah. I have gone debatable. Now, he did score 44 goals coming into the 18-19 season, which is his best ever goal return. However, His second best ever goal return came last season in the 2021 campaign when he scored 31 goals. I think, look, we've also seen what he can do. And we now know there's no, like, in 18-19, there was the is he a one season wonder thing. And now it's become a meme. He's a five season wonder. Ha ha ha. And we do that because Salah's brilliant and we know he's brilliant and he scores loads of goals every season. So as much as I think he was a little bit faster back then, I think he's lost a touch of his pace, but I think his all-round awareness has grown, but he was an absolute goal machine. So I'm going to put debatable, although I would say everything that Salah brings, the fact that he could do it in a counter-attacking side there, he can do it in a possession-based side, and he could do it in a side that was completely under the cosh and totally stripped of a lot of its best players last season, shows that he's in that very fine bracket of the best players on the planet. So maybe it's not debatable, maybe it's a gain. But I've put it debatable just to be as objective as possible. The Mane stuff, I'm sure there'll be some people who argue that's a loss because of how poor he was last season. He had his second best ever goal return in 17-18, which I just presumed that would have been his best goal return, but it wasn't. His second worst goal return was in 2021 last season with just 16 goals, although he did score less in 15-16. 13, he did it in 19 fewer games. So it was a bad season for Sadio, and that's why, as much as I think, again, his all-around completeness and all the things he's proven about himself, I think he's a better all-around footballer now. That might be debatable leading towards loss, whereas I think Salah's debatable leading towards gain. So that's one of the bigger areas of concern for Liverpool is just that at 29 years old, are the established front three? I think there's no clear, obvious, or inarguable gains there. You could make a strong case for them all being losses. I think you can make a stronger case for Salah to be a gain, but either way, the net, I think across those three players, you're probably slightly worse than they were going into 18-19, which I think is fair. Right, this is where it gets interesting. We head towards the final sort of three members of the squad. Daniel Sturridge has been replaced in the squad by Diogo Jota. I think that is a clear and obvious gain. I love Daniel Sturridge, great, and hopefully he gets back to playing with Real Mallorca this season. Sturridge made 20 appearances in 17-18, just 630 minutes, got 3 goals and 3 assists. Last season, Diogo Jota made 10 more appearances, 1763 minutes, 13 goals and 1 assist. You didn't even need to see the stats, but those are the stats. Clear, night and day, streets ahead. And bear in mind, at the start of the 18-19 season, Sturridge was the fourth choice. So you think about PSG when Bobby Firmino's got his eye injury after being poked in the eye against Tottenham, you know, leads to all that. Sturridge was the next in line. And then it becomes Origi as the season progresses, but we'll come on to him in a second. But yeah, I think that's one area where there is a complete and obvious gain in terms of what they're doing. Moving forward then, Origi versus Origi. I've gone debatable because if we were arguing about the end of the 18-19 season of Origi versus the one now, that is a clear and obvious by miles loss, because Origi now, he scored one goal last season, I think one goal and one assist for Liverpool last season, or one goal, two assists. Either way, a pretty paltry return. But what is interesting about this, because again, we're debating the merits of this 18-19 Liverpool, the team that from this point of the season went on and became the best side in the world for two seasons. I've gone debatable because Origi came into this season having been on loan at Wolfsburg and not having a particularly good time. 7 goals and 3 assists in 37 appearances. He made just 9 minutes of appearances for Liverpool in that season. Right at the start, he played a game before going out on loan. That last season, Divock played just 17 games, just 536 minutes. 1 goal, 2 assists. There you go. I knew I'd done the stats somewhere. So you have to detach what we know about what Origi did in 18-19, because we don't know what he's going to do this season. Now, we suspect he's going to continue to not be really good. I think that's fair. But just for the sake of the pure data of the matter, I think it's actually a debatable borderline loss, because what we know Origi would go on to do, he, you know, this coming season, the 18-19 season, is the season where he becomes an absolute cult hero for Liverpool. You've got Everton, you've got Newcastle, and you've got Barcelona, and you've got the Champions League final. cast in bronze, put him alongside Bill Shankly, as far as I'm concerned, outside the cop. Whereas now Origi has had to live. It's a bit like having the ignominy of being Paul McCartney and not dying at the peak of your powers and being compared to John Lennon, who got to make all his best music, then die, and then have everyone hold him up on a pedestal forever. Origi is basically Paul McCartney at this point. And he has the ability to be good, and that's a bit sly because Paul McCartney's made some very good material. Flaming Pie was a lot longer ago than you remember if you're around my age. It was 97, great album. But still, 30 years after his peak of the Beatles. Anyway, my point is this, is that I'll put debatable, because it is very, very debatable depending which angle you're coming at it. Debatable borderline loss. But where there is another major, completely inarguable gain in Liverpool's attacking options, Rian Brewster, who was injured for the entirety of 17-18, he missed all of 18-19 in terms of not a single minute of appearance, but he was an unused substitute twice, Barcelona and the Champions League final, which is why he's in Madrid and why he gets a medal and why you see him running around the pitch in a kit, even though he offered nothing in terms of the actual output on the pitch for Liverpool. Flip him out of the squad and put Takumi Minamino in. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I am convinced by Taki. We also know right now he's just picked up a knock on international duty with Japan, which is kind of by the by. The point is, going into these campaigns, going into 18-19, Rian Brewster was injured and then offered and wasn't able to contribute at all. So even if we thought he had a higher ceiling or whatever, he literally couldn't play football. So he effectively was not a member of Liverpool's squad. So Liverpool have got an extra player this season compared to going into that season. That player is Minamino. Now, can he offer more output? I mean, look, all he has to do is play a game of football and he will have offered more and given more squad depth just by existing. Or he just has to make three substitute appearances throughout the season and that will have made him more. But yeah, that is that. Taki made 27 appearances, including the Southampton loan last year. 1,460 minutes, 6 goals and 2 assists. So yeah, that is inarguably a gain to Liverpool's squad. So that's where we're at. And what I've done, actually, by the way, I've done a sort of sister video to this. I did this on my channel, which is where I normally do these sort of opinion pieces. I just needed a better setup for this. And it fitted with Redmen, because a lot more people are melting down over Liverpool's situation. And obviously more people interact with Redmen TV. And it meant I could get Si to help me out with it as well, which is great. But I've done a video on what I think Liverpool's biggest transfer gambles are this season based on that. Because as much as there are clear gains in various positions, are they clear enough? And I think those players are Taki, Ox, Naby, Nico and Origi. So I've done a video on that. That's on my YouTube channel right now. Again, a bit more opinion-based, although it adds some of the data from this into my discussion on that. We'll link to that. We'll annotate to that. You can check that out. But yeah, let's know your thoughts on everything that I've sort of discussed there, because the real issue you've got there is, I think, is a bit of... we could do with improving. So I'm not going to sit here and say that Liverpool can't improve on Minamino, Origi. And in terms of midfield, you could improve upon Milner, and you can argue that you can improve on Keita and Ox, because neither of them has been stellar in the last couple of seasons. And you could maybe get a better other player than Phillips, maybe, and you can have a better backup goalkeeper. The point of all of this is what I'm trying to sort of indicate here. And I just to give you one last look at that, in terms of there are far more gains to this squad than there are losses, and most of the debatables, I think, err towards the gain side rather than the loss side. And now, obviously, this can't quite factor in, you know, the injuries and the fitness. We don't know about Virgil van Dijk, which, again, is why I've made him a debatable, not a clear gain. And Gomez is a gain only because of the fact of where he was contextually at the start of that season. But my point is this. At the start of the 18-19 season, Liverpool had lost the Europa League final, scraped into fourth, managed to get to the Champions League final before having the floor wiped with them with Real Madrid. They went out and added some real quality to that side. And then from there onwards, they went on to get 97 points in the league, run Man City to the final game of the season, whilst also getting to the Champions League final and winning the Champions League final. And then the following season, all they did was add Adrian and an 18-year-old Harvey Elliott to that, and went on and got 99 points, winning the league title, absolutely storming the league, even the fact that COVID tried to undercut that, but they still did. They still won it at the earliest possible point. In fact, if they just not played a single game after lockdown, they'd have still won the league anyway. That's how good that side was. And then what happened, the champions then added Thiago, Jota, Tsimikas, and ultimately Konate to that as well. And Minamino, sorry, was added in there as well. I always forget that. Liverpool added all of those players to that side as well, which has now led them to where they are now. And that's kind of what I'm driving at, is I think Liverpool are better now. Now, what we can't know, because it's football and we don't know what's going to happen this season, is how much the improvements to rivals has made. So Manchester United will be closer and Chelsea will be closer. But the point is that Liverpool have not stood still. It feels like it sometimes, because when you're looking at the transfer window in isolation, it's hard not to look at Konate and say, well, that's just one player. But I would argue, and that's the point of all this, is if you're feeling a little unsure about how good Liverpool are, I think Liverpool are better than the best Liverpool side there's ever been. I think this side is better than the best one that's ever been. In my lifetime, the 18-19 and the 19-20 Liverpool is without a doubt the best Liverpool side I've ever seen. And this squad is more experienced. It's actually got it's very close age-wise as well, so it's not gained too much age. So there's not loads of players who are into the danger zone in terms of their age brackets. And we've added some great young talent. So in Harvey Elliott and in Curtis Jones in midfield, you've added two hot, young, up-and-coming players who are more than capable of contributing right now as well. And in terms of Jota and Minamino, as much as Minamino doesn't draw the eye as much as some people may hope he does, he's an extra player in terms of what Liverpool had in that time compared to Rian Brewster. So, look, yeah, there you go. It's a long-winded way of saying this, but Liverpool are better than now, technically, on paper, than they've ever been. It's now up to them to see it in reality. There. That's it. Thank you. Thanks to everyone who joined me live for this one. Welcome to your man, Patanik, who's joined as a first teamer. John Harrison with the comment here saying, people say we have a weak squad. People do. And because it's easy, because Liverpool finished third and had a real struggle last season and only added one player. But the thing is, from the Liverpool side that was struggling, they've not added one player to the Liverpool side that lost six games at Anfield. They've added Virgil van Dijk, Joel Matip, Gomez, Konate, Henderson was injured in the back period of that. Fabinho was out for a stretch of that as well. Jota was out for that period as well. Thiago had only just come back in. And it sounds stupid. It sounds like excuse making. It's just not. It's just the reality of it. The Liverpool side that catastrophically fell off a cliff was nowhere even close to the best Liverpool side. Liverpool didn't play a team that had Alisson, Trent, Virgil, Gomez/Matip, Robertson, Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, Mane, Salah, Firmino for that team did not play a single minute of football last season. It's one of them, isn't it? And I might be miles off, by the way. I might be miles off this, but the thing is, none of us knows, so you can choose to be super miserable with it, or you can choose to accentuate the positive. It doesn't change the reality of it one way or the other. I'm just presenting a calm take on the situation that Liverpool are in. Arjan, who's just joined as a first teamer, says, if we look to the man in the first starting 11, we have one of the best squads with the best defence in Europe, but there's a lack of depth on the bench. Again, compared to Manchester City, yes. Compared to Paris Saint-Germain, yes. And maybe look at Chelsea and United to some extent too, but also, it shouldn't be underestimated. They've bought a lot of players in and those players need to get up to speed, and some of those players won't work out because not all new signings do. Liverpool have got an established side and that counts for something. Paul Tompkins has written a great article about this, by the way, on Tompkins Times. Highly, highly recommended. So I think it's a little bit of a... Because again, I'm comparing this to the squad that went on to have Liverpool's most successful two-year period ever in the Premier League, and the squad depth is better now than it was then. So the idea of what are we comparing our squad to? Because if we're comparing it to other teams, then that's fine, but there's no guarantee it's hard. It's easy to do that, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything is what I'm driving at. Yes. FPL saying, maybe when Pedro Neto becomes available, we might go in for him. Klopp may not have said this publicly, as he doesn't want players like Neto's price to rise because of potential interest from other clubs. Yeah, maybe. It's a path well trodden now because of Jota, isn't it? So it could be a thing. John saying, mate, you're spot on with this. This is the best squad since the 80s. Great mix of youth and experience. And we have the best right back and left back in the league and the best centre-half and the best right winger and arguably the best left winger and the best box-to-box midfielder. The best DM arguably joint with Kante. And I think Thiago will prove to be the best creative midfielder in the league as well, but there you go. And Connor are saying, mate, everyone has improved around us, though. They have, absolutely have. But my point about this is that, again, Liverpool have improved as well. Liverpool haven't not improved, but none of those teams that we're talking about were as good as Liverpool in that period. So Man City might have won the league with more points in 18-19, and they won the domestic cups, but they got nowhere near in the Champions League. And then the following season, Liverpool absolutely blitzed them in the league. And what did they do? Just domestic cups, did they do? I can't even remember. Then last season, okay, yeah, they get to a Champions League final, which they still don't win. And yeah, they blitzed the league. But again, in a season where Liverpool had suffered the worst injury crisis in the history of football. So yeah, and teams have improved. But the point is this, is when you're at the top, You need to spend to improve, but there's a point at which you're throwing money, good money after bad. How much more improvement can you do? And I think I agree. And this is one of the points I made this video over on my channel, which I watch this and then go and watch that and then talk to me in the comments on there or in here, because they kind of I answer a few of these points and what have you. But my generalized point on this is there's a reason Liverpool bought Ozan Kabak on loan and then sacked him off, and there's a reason we got Ben Davies for a few quid in January. It's because we wanted a centre-half, and that centre-half was Konate, but they couldn't get him in January, so they knew that, so they had to wait until that to get him, and they've gone and got the player that they actually want for the money they wanted to spend. It wouldn't shock me if, I don't think Liverpool wanted to go and spend another, because again, let's just to quickly get the squad up. You've got to move players out to bring players in. Now Origi's the one, but to my mind, Origi is our sixth choice forward at this point, and there's an argument that he might be seventh because Harvey Elliott might get in there. He's the one big slot for improvement. There were no reasonable bids in for him, and he's not really interested in leaving. So you've got to go and buy someone really who's like in the 20-30 million pound bracket, who's just another squad player. Liverpool have got squad players. They need better first team players so that the lads can start to sit down. Firmino needs to start to be the first sub, and the same goes for Mane. That's where you'd improve, not necessarily going and buying just someone. Man City can afford to do that. They can afford to spunk 30, 40, 50 million pounds on players, and when it doesn't work, they just sack them off at a loss because they don't care about losing the money in that regard. Liverpool don't work that way, so they need to be cannier. But anyway, the point is, I've made that over on that other thing. So yeah, go and check that out on my channel if you want to. Let's see, key to start, it may be the best Liverpool squad on paper of all time, but with the current competition, is it going to be enough? No idea. No idea. I've got no idea whether it's going to be good enough. But my point is that you can't ever know. I think you've got to benchmark. You can only benchmark this Liverpool side against itself, because Man City can go and do 100 points. But Liverpool shouldn't theoretically be capable of doing between 97 and 100 if they want to, because they've got precedent for being able to do that. The same with Man City have. We look at Man City and go, why? Man City are going to absolutely piss the league. But why don't we say the same to Liverpool? Because Liverpool's squad has gotten better since they last did it. Man City's squad has gotten better too, but is it significantly better than the squad that Liverpool toppled? I don't think so. I mean, they had Aguero at that time. And they've brought Grealish in, great. But again, I can't speak for every single player in Manchester City squad or Chelsea squad. It will be more competitive. I'd be surprised if a team wins it on more than 90 points this year. But yeah, there you go. It's simple answer. None of us knows. But all I'm offering is a crumb of comfort to say that if you think it's fucked, it's probably not. Right? Keith starts saying, I don't think it's about buying someone for the bench. What fans are upset with is not buying someone to put Mane on the bench, for example. That's how you build these silly squads. No, 100%. That's exactly it. Everyone agrees with that. I don't think there's a single person who doesn't agree. But how much does it cost to replace Sadio Mane? You're talking, I think Jota is kind of skews it a little bit. I think we've done brilliant business with Diogo Jota, but you need to go and do that again. Or you maybe need to go and do that guaranteedly. I agree. Simple point. Yes, I think to replace Mane, I think Mane is a £100 million footballer still, and so you're looking at someone to replace him in the squad. How much does that cost, and who is actually good enough? Because people are saying Pedro Neto, he's not better than Sadio Mane. He might grow to be, but right now he's not. That's a gamble. So you're spending big money to gamble on someone. I think Liverpool need to reduce the gamble when you replace Mane or Salah, who are both 20 goal a season forwards plus. you're going to have to go and get a sure thing, and that's not easily done. But you've got time to do that. You can do that next summer. And I think you continue the evolution if you're doing those things. Connor R, do you think we're holding on for a big signing next summer, hence why we had a quiet summer? No, the point I made earlier is that I don't know, but the Liverpool have got loads of precedent for that. They don't go and buy just someone. They go and buy the players they need. Because what happens when you go and pick up a player or a body, you end up with Takumi Minamino, who might be really good, but we've taken a bit of a gamble on that, and right now that's not paid off. You do need to go and spend the big bucks, and you need to go and spend the big wages. You need to go and get established players, I think. And we've done that where we've needed to. Alisson, Virgil being the prime examples. Fabinho's another one. Thiago's another one. And Jota's sort of that. But yeah, I think so. But also, it sounds like you're being an apologist for the owners, because that's how people talk these days. It's got nothing to do with it. Liverpool have track records of doing these things. I think if they let Salah or Mane go, they've got no choice but to go and get someone ready-made, because that's too big of a gamble. If you lose one of those lads, you're losing 20 goals from your side. And you don't just go and get someone for that. You go and get someone who you know, as close to know as possible, can do that business for you. Right. Thanks to everyone who joined us. That was really good, really interesting. I hope everyone came away with something. As I say, the bit of opinion thrown in there, because there always is with football, of course. There's no absolutes in anything. But I've tried to be as clear as possible. And if anyone has any questions around it, please do feel free to use the comments. We have a zero tolerance policy on dickheads in the comments, by the way. So if you wish to be a dickhead or be offensive, you will be removed from the comments and not be allowed to comment. So we want to foster a nice community on Redmen more this season. And again, if you want to head over to my channel, which is Mates TV, then I've done that shoulder content looking at the five biggest gambles, talking about Taki, Ox, Naby, Nico and Origi, and why I don't think it's quite as big a gamble, but also why I think they might have chosen that gamble this season. Thanks everyone, hope you have a wonderful afternoon. I really enjoyed that. And yeah, the football return this week, build up shows. We've also got our Jordan Henderson 10 Years of Red documentary series available as physical media. It's a DVD, you can get that right now. They're selling out like hotcakes on a very small print run on that, so if you want one, thinking ahead to gift season, you can do that. We've also got a competition run. If you want more from us, extra Redmen content, then subscribe to theredmentv.com. It's a bit like our Patreon. We've got a streaming service there for you guys, documentaries, features, and extra Redmen videos as well. So yeah, go and do that. But other than that, thank you very much. Have a wonderful afternoon. I'll see you all soon. Ta-da.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.